welcome back to the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. Today, we would love to give a shout out to Sean and to Mark and Jen, Charlie, Tom, Sam, but there's so many people, John, the arborist. We've had so much great feedback and yeah, it's been a terrific week. How about you, Cal?
I'm going to give a shout out to...
All your friends.
All my friends. Yes, all of them.
Well, Rosie and Holly, we talked about quite a bit already this morning. They don't
and
know
Chloe.
That they... And Chloe, obviously. So that's to come a little bit later. So we've got really good news. Sean White from the Great Big Paddle Parade and from Soak Lifestyle, who's one of the co-founders over there, he stopped by today for an exclusive interview all about the paddle parade. And I mean, we talked about everything. It's a great extended interview. So good.
Yeah. I really, really respect his focus on sea safety and water safety. I feel like I got a bit of a lesson there.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you'll hear it coming up later on in the episode. But right now we're going to turn over to restaurant news. So the Seahorse in Dartmouth, congratulations. They've been featured on Channel 4 and in the show Remarkable Places to Eat. So we wanted to extend congratulations to Mitch and the team. And something new, the Bay over on Tor Abbey Sands, they're starting up a live music calendar next Wednesday. I know. Singer-songwriter, who I'm not familiar with this fella, Christian Pitocho.
Pitocho.
It starts 6th of September at 7 p.m. So that'll be really great vibes.
Very nice.
They've got those big, like a window wall at the end of the restaurant that opens up out onto Tor Abbey Sands. So that'll be really nice on a Wednesday.
Do we know if they're going to be doing music every Wednesday with this new live music calendar?
Or is it to be seen? Well, it's TBC. But yeah, they should do it. Michelle, listen, you need to have music on Wednesdays. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I love it.
And turning to bar news, we just got off the phone with Andy Penrose over at Deck Chair Gin. And the new Key Inn that they owned, the Freehold, has been sold. So they're going to be under new ownership over at the new Key Inn. And the new pub's going to carry on, hopefully tonight. New ownership, 7 days a week, longer trading hours. So congratulations to the owners of the new pub. It's still going to be... As far as we know, it's still going to be the new Key Inn. But what's nice is that Matt and Andy now are going to be able to expand their business, Deck Chair Gin and Riviera Rum, and they're going to be expanding their own business called Devon Coast Distilling. So congratulations to Matt and Andy.
Amazing, guys.
And thanks to those guys for coming on today and giving us that exclusive. Now, in supplier news, Bay's Brewery is celebrating their huge charity result. They've raised a total of £27,000 for Paynton Zoo. Isn't that amazing?
That's just for Paynton Zoo?
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's great.
Yeah. It's part of like their wildlife trust charitable efforts. You know, it's £1,000 here, £1,000 there, you know, but it's a total of £27,000. So we wanted to extend huge congratulations to Peter, Sean, and the entire team at Bay's. And congratulations, of course, to the zoo.
Yeah. Well, lots of applause coming today.
Oh, God. Just remember that you can order Bay's Brewery beer online. You use the code LOYALTY30 and you get 30% off your next order.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, I think they have every social media post that I read, they always have it at the bottom. So I think it's kind of a standing thing. So I don't want to give away their, you know what I mean, terms and conditions. But yeah, LOYALTY30, that's the code you have to use. So in other news, Fraser Scallops, who was at Fraser Pugh, he was featured on More4's show called Devon and Cornwall this week. So you can watch that online on the Channel 4 app. And it shows how he dives for these hand-dive scallops.
Yeah, hand-dive scallops. So it's a sustainable way of...
harvesting.
Yeah, of harvesting the scallops.
Because there's a big scallop farm out near Thatcher's Rock. Mm-hmm. And, so I imagine that they're just like grown there, or I thought it was a scallop farm. Maybe it's a mussel farm. But yeah, there's like all different ways of like getting scallops and mussels and clams and things like that. But this is a way where he's actually diving and then finding them himself.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear him talk about it. You were playing it a bit this morning, weren't
you? Yeah, it is interesting because he's saying that he'll go to a spot and then he'll just leave it for 6 months.
Yeah.
Let the scallops kind of regrow, come back. And then come back in 6 months' time and get more scallops. So he just finds lots of different spots and visits each one kind of individually, allowing the allowing the scallops time to get back to their normal population.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Really it's, cool. Yeah. Sustainability is the key. And I know that like I'm on their email list, but they do like fresh scallops. And, you know, when he has them, he'll like email and say, oh, Friday is scallop day. And I think they deliver them and then you can have them for the weekend. It's really an incredible business. So congratulations to Fraser and his colleagues at Fraser Scallops.
Also, if you want to watch it, so it's Channel 4.
Yeah, I think it's like an app, isn't it?
You can get the app or you can just type in Channel 4, Devon and Cornwall, and then it's Season 3, Episode 1.
Ah, good. Yeah, I think it was just on this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was aired on the 28th.
Nice.
2 days ago. 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Where are we?
Not sure. Bit of sad news. We just saw announced that Brixham Gin announced that they're now on hiatus while they explore the brand and they will not be trading until further notice.
Good luck to them though.
Yeah, definitely good luck. So as far as we understand it, the still house on Paignton Harbour is still open for business. So you can still, you know what I mean, go in and enjoy, you know, the pub and, the, you know, the Paignton Harbour area. But it's just like the gin company, the supplier, supplies the spirit. They're on hiatus. Now turning over to events. This weekend is so jam-packed, I cannot even
Saturday
tell you.
Saturday is too much.
There's too much on Saturday. I don't know why everybody waited until the 2nd of September, but we're going to get stuck in. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hold on to your hat. Saturday, of course, is Torbay Pride, and it takes place on Tor Abbey Sands. The big parade is departing 11 a.m. from Princess Gardens. This event is totally free, 100% inclusive. Bring the kids. There's family-friendly kid zone, family-friendly market, food, drink. There'll be a Bay's Brewery tent, music nice. On stage. There's like a big stage, tons of fun, and the fun fair is still on the meadows. Oh, so there's nice. Loads to do, you know, yeah. Loads to do and see. So you visit torbaypride.co.uk, and they've got a map of the site, so what's going to be where, and also the timings for all of the various stage performances. So that's quite cool.
Yeah, and then we've also got the, on the 2nd? Yeah,
Torquay Rocks is all day at the Grand. And so that is like just an absolute ton of live music, tribute acts, and so on. Tickets for that are £20, but all of the proceeds are going to charity. So that's quite good. One more, we can't miss out. The Apple Pie Fair is in Marlden this Saturday. And the after party is at the Church House Inn on the Green. And they've got live music and paella. Four factors. Nice. Why not? Right. But
nothing goes with live music like some paella.
Yeah. Why not? You know what? Because there are big events. You know, there's Pride and then the event that we're going to talk about next. But, you know, there also are these, you know, country, you know, the Apple Pie Fair. It's just so sweet. I absolutely love it. Sweet, very British. One of this weekend's big events, though, is the Great Big Paddle Parade. It's the 2nd, Saturday, the 2nd September, and it starts at 9:30. And we are delighted now to welcome the organizer, Sean White from Soak, on the podcast to tell us more.
Let's have a listen now.
And here we are back with Sean White, co-founder of Soak Lifestyle and the founder of the big, Great Big Paddle Parade. Welcome, Sean.
Hi.
So, yeah, we're here to talk about the Great Big Paddle Parade is happening this weekend, and Sean's here to tell us all about it. So, Sean, it's been running for a few years now, hasn't it?
This is actually only our second year.
Oh, is
That's
it?
Our second year,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it nearly didn't happen. As lots of people know, it was founded under our other company, WeSup. And when we ended WeSup last year, I was really unsure if I was going to have the energy to put it together again. But there was an outpouring of interest in it, and everyone wanted to get back together and do it. That's and nice. Actually, it was a really nice thing. When I decided to do it, it was like, okay, I'm alive again. Let's go. Yeah. And it was a really nice thing to look forward to for the end of this season. So here we are.
Oh, yeah. I love that. It's only been running for 2 years. Tell us about last year.
Last year was absolutely unreal. I mean, for one, for 2 weeks before, we were looking at one of the biggest storm periods of the whole season. And so there was it within that storm period, it was moving kind of the storm cycle, sorry, was moving left and right over the weekend window that we had for the parade. And we really didn't think it was going to happen. And when it came to 4 days before, which was the final date that we had to make a decision, I had kind of surmised that the weather was going to move just enough to be able to allow us to do the paddle in the morning. So yeah. We were in really big conversations with the RNLI, the Harbour Authority, and the coxswain of the Brixham lifeboat. He was like absolutely adamant that we could still do the whole paddle up to Fishcombe Cove. And I was like, absolutely not. The wind is going to blow in this way. I literally had to like fight my corner to not do the whole thing as a safety measure.
For safety.
Yeah, the Brixham lifeboat thought it would be safe. And I was like, no, this is different. This is paddleboarding.
Yeah.
And I argued it and he said, well, it's on your head. And it was really, I was pooing myself. You know, it was a big call. And so we managed to we were originally going to be leaving from 6 sites, right? And we moved everybody into 2. And the paddle was really short. It was just, I think we were on the water only for about an hour in the end.
Okay.
Bear in mind, people had come from almost every county in the country for that 1 hour. But man, even now it makes me fizz. Feeling the energy, there were 544 people on the water. And, you know, to have something that you believe in so passionately validated by that many people all coming together for a thing they don't even really know about.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And so if you ask me about last year, it was one of the things that I've done in my life that really and truly felt really aligned to my human nature. Bringing all those people together, sharing really beautiful energy with absolutely like-minded people who were there just for the paddling, just for the experience, just for that sense of shared energy to each other and to where we live. So it's amazing.
So you had 500 last year. What's the expectations for this year?
So basically this year, well, we had always set a target. Even last year, we wanted to create the world record for the most paddlers on parade. It would have been 830 people.
Okay.
We set it a target at 1,000. but last year, because of the weather, we actually had to close ticket sales 2 weeks before. This year, because of the weather, we actually didn't really start selling tickets until 2 weeks before. We'd sold quite a lot early. Like as soon as we announced we were going to do it, the diehard fans of last year went, I'm in. And we sold like 250 tickets within like, I think it was in about 3 hours or something like that. Everyone just went, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then the weather happened, or didn't happen, should I say. And I was saying earlier, wasn't I? You know, we've traded 4 days in the paddleboard business this year, full days. Otherwise, it's been super windy. And if it hasn't been windy, it's been cold. Or if it hasn't been cold and windy, the wind's been blown in the wrong direction, made it unsafe. And I've spoke to so many people who just haven't even gotten their paddleboards out of their bags this year.
Mm. Yeah.
So people haven't been paddling. And it's been incredibly difficult to try and generate marketing that says, hey guys, let's go paddling. Yeah. Paddling's the best. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's impossible to inspire people.
You got to get really hooked onto Photoshop to put this in those pictures.
Yeah. And I'm really terrible. Like, it has to feel really authentic if I'm going online. And I haven't really been able to do that.
Yeah.
So last week when I realized that the weather was actually looking something like it, I was like, finally, I can start like talking about the thing like actually happening. And true to form, the weather's going to turn good. And we've sold like another like 300 tickets since then. So we're up to about 550 now. So
great. And if they all turn up, then you've broken last year's record.
Yeah, so that's good.
As long as you can best yourself.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that those tickets will just keep going up between now and then. Most of those tickets were from out of towners. You know, these are people who are from every other county in the country. And local people will literally wait until the 11th hour in order to check the weather is actually what we say it's going to be.
I mean, I gotta be honest.
Callum's
I'm one of those.
Yeah,
there you go.
Go on, Callum. So, right, what is your reservation? Why haven't you booked a ticket yet?
Yeah, I guess the weather. I guess I also just don't feel like I know enough about it. Like, I mean, it sounds amazing, 500 people on the water all together.
Mm.
But what are we doing afterwards? What are we doing before? Is it just 1 hour, then we pack our bags and go? Or is there like a beach barbecue or something afterwards to stick around for?
Like, really
what's the actual like the other parts of the paddle parade that aren't just paddling.
Yeah, there is no other part.
Okay, it's just it's paddling.
Yeah,
it's paddling. World record.
So this is really interesting. Okay, so I really wanted to create a festival around the event. Last year when we did the event, it was really proof of concept. That was it.
Yeah.
It was just to see how did it feel to have that many people in the car parks and that many people on the beaches. How did it look with that much big water sports equipment in any one location?
Yeah.
And no one had done this before. So it was truly proof of concept and it worked. It was fine. You know, like we were even at that capacity, we were like, oh my God, 1,000 people is going to be easy. No problem.
Yeah.
We needed to understand how the management was going to work and how much it was going to cost and everything like that. And as I said earlier, because of the end of WESUP last year, this year has been a massive reset for me personally from a financial point of view and also from a team point of view. With WESUP, we were employing at one point like 65 people, something like that. Yeah, it was a really big entity for us. And now we got 4.
Yeah.
You know, so when we're talking about putting on an event at scale, you have to remember that there's so much that goes into it.
Mm.
But I am just one man these days.
Yeah.
And so actually, when I thought about doing it this year, I was like, okay, we can do it, but somebody else would have to do the on land aspect of this festival that I wanted to do. So I tried to hand over the responsibility to, I won't mention any names, but they let us down.
To partners. Okay.
Yeah. And so it ended up not being able to happen. Then I tried to move it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I wrote an event management plan for it, a pretty comprehensive one. And I realized that it was just going to take a really big team. If you think like it's not a back garden barbecue anymore, when you've got 1,000 people, it's a full blown event, you know, and even just clearing up plastic cups after 1,000 people, when you think who's going to do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot. And so I felt like it was going to take away the energy of the actual purpose for why I was doing this.
Sure.
I don't want to be running around like a headless chicken, checking that everything isn't catching on fire.
Yeah.
I want to be paddling with my friends and I want to be enjoying this whole thing.
Yes.
This year, you know, I didn't have the time to rush and get this big festival going like I wanted to. So that will be for next year.
So it sounds like the plan isn't just for this paddleball. This is going to be an ongoing event almost every year.
This is going to be a legacy event. Yeah. This will be a legacy event. This year we will have a social, but it's low key. I haven't made a big deal about it.
No.
For those of you who listen, you're welcome to come back down to Soak, which is on Abbey Sands Beach, which is where the parade finishes.
Yeah.
Our section of the parade anyway. And we'll have a DJ there and we'll have some beers and we'll celebrate it until the tide swamps us.
Okay.
we're on a equinox right now. And so by Saturday, which is the peak of the tide, it's 5.5 meters. Our containers down there actually get submerged in the water.
Oh my God.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. You float away.
So you can all come and help us prepare sandbags and we'll put the sandbags in place and we'll go elsewhere.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, listeners of the pod, head to Soak afterwards. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
I forgot to mention that Soak's on Abbey Sands. So yeah, it's really good. So interesting. So we've covered off kind of the history, what the plan is this year. So can you just remind us of like kind of the logistics on the day? So where do people park? How do they get there? What's the plan?
Yeah, sure. So the parade is leaving from 3 locations. It's been designed that way so that it can involve everybody. The parade itself is about celebrating the coastline, and it all came around because we wanted people to be able to experience the Great English Riviera.
Yeah.
And I had this idea that we could make Torquay or Torbay, even the English Riviera, the premier stand-up paddleboarding destination in the UK, because it is so safe. It is supremely accessible. There are facilities in almost every little corner of the bay. And so we've spread the event over 3 locations. The people who are really confident, competent paddlers, who have the skill to do a 20K paddle will be leaving from Abbey Sands Beach. It is a there and back guided tour.
There you go, Callum. 20K?
20K.
Yeah.
I think possible. Yeah.
10K there, 10K back. Totally possible.
Yeah.
So long as you know how to paddle.
He's paddled from his folks own Cherry Tree Hotel. Shout out Trish and Alan. They so it's a big pink one on like Paynton, like Esplanade.
You usually can see it, but it's a little bit foggy today. So
he's paddled from Paynton Pier, Paynton Beach, all the way over to the office on Beacon Quay. How far is that?
That's about 3.5K.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'd have to do that like another.
Yeah. No.
Six times.
I've gone from Fishkim to Torquay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's there and back, basically.
Yeah. It's there and back. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going along the coastline? Or are you going straight line?
We go along the coastline.
Yeah.
So it's a really important feature of the event because we're also promoting water safety.
Yes.
And it's a really important conversation that just isn't being had.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one because people, when it comes to safety, people are so passionate about it. And a lot of people think they know something, but they really don't.
No.
And a lot of people don't know what they don't know.
Yes.
And they don't even know that they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the conversation's very hard. And, the parade was actually brought about as an opportunity to create some dialogue around that issue. So paddling along the coastline is one of my absolute primary go-to pieces of education. Okay. Never paddle further away from the coast and you can absolutely swim back in.
Yes.
The most sensible advice ever, right?
Does that advice stand even if you have a life vest?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What if you wear a life jacket but no one can hear you scream?
Okay, yeah.
What good is that?
Yeah.
Life jackets is such a strange conversation as well, because why don't surfers wear life jackets?
A restricted movement?
But are they in a dangerous environment in the water?
Definitely.
All right. But why is it okay that they don't have a life jacket?
Because they've got a buoyancy aid attached to their leg.
Attached to their leg.
Yeah.
So what about a stand-up paddleboarder?
Okay, I understand. But my worry would be that the stand-up paddleboard can just pop.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you mean pop? What does that mean?
If you buy a cheap paddleboard, shout out to Paul at SUP Services. I asked him this at the beginning of the season in June when I was having a bunch of my boards repaired. Hey, Paul, how many of these cheap boards have been brought back to you for repair because they've exploded on people when they've been out on the water?
Yeah.
How many do you think? Do you think it's a rare occurrence?
Right? I didn't even think that they could pop.
Oh, really?
Oh, right. I thought you meant...
So if you buy a board from Tesco's or Lidl's or anywhere else that they are, you know...
Are they sold there now?
Even online.
They are sold... I'm not just slating those companies, sorry, you know...
Yeah, other companies are welcome to be slated.
We got our first board, which is fantastic. Really, really solid board. And then my dad bought a couple more from a different company online. And they're terrible. I think out of the five that they bought, I think three I've had to repair.
Go back to this point. How many boards do you think have blown up on people who've been out in the ocean paddleboarding?
I don't know. Give me a number. Maybe two a week, maybe 50?
Go to June. 50 boards pre-season. Yeah. He said at least 50 boards have been back to him. That's a dazzling number.
Imagine
you're somebody, and I don't mind being really honest about this point. People think I'm a purist paddleboarder, right? They think I've got some big ego attached to my skill set, and that, you know, I don't respect the fact that cheap boards enable people to get into the sport. Mm. I was one of the biggest bastions of cheap equipment when they came on board because of the way that it made the sport so accessible.
Yes. Yeah.
But what I didn't realize at the time was that, unfortunately, when somebody buys a cheap piece of equipment, they immediately devalue the activity, the sport, right? They're not searching for a really good quality performance bit of kit that's going to last the time. They've bought something that is cheap because it's what they can afford. But then if they can only afford £150 or £200 for a paddleboard, why would they spend £45 going to get trained? More so, why would they spend £200 on their family going to get trained how to use it? They're like, I bought a board, it's £200. Why the hell am I going to go and spend £200 on training?
Yeah.
So they're not getting trained.
No training.
And then...
Cheap board.
No training, cheap board. Cheap board, hard to use because they're narrow and thin and tough to stand on. They bend in the middle so they don't paddle or glide very fast. And so when you're caught in the offshore wind out there and your board's like a banana and you don't have the awareness or the skill set and you don't know what you don't know about safety or paddle skill, all of a sudden you're super compromised on a board that could blow up on you.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. And trying to have that conversation in the public domain is really difficult because people just think that I'm slating people who don't have a lot of money.
Right.
It's not about that.
No.
I don't have a lot of money. I'm so broke. But if I can't afford a bit of equipment that's going to save my life, then I just won't do it. I really want to go wing foiling, right? Mm-hmm. It's the next sport I want to try. I could go out there and buy a cheap wing foil. But do I want to be out in the middle of the ocean with a cheap wing foil that have cheap glue or cheap stitches or cheap valves and run the risk of that thing deflating and then I have no power to get myself back and I could be a mile offshore?
Yeah.
Mm. I'd be mad, wouldn't I?
Yes, yes.
Now, you put yourself as somebody who is a very amateur swimmer because let's face it, a lot of people who founded paddleboarding have found the first water sport that is accessible to them in their lives. Okay. Most people who bought a paddleboard have never been in the ocean before. They found this sport that they can engage with this wonderful environment, but they don't even really know how to swim. So when they're in an offshore wind and they've got caught out there, they just don't know what to do. And this is the danger. This is the danger of the lack of education that people have. And so the paddle parade is really just a very subtle opportunity to start having this conversation, which is like, it's so frustrating that in the end, it comes down to money. I'm trying to do something about that. This season coming, I'm going to be offering training, which will be a pay what you can afford scheme. And I may continue to do that always. But that's not the real world. You know, that's not what most people are afforded to do. Mm. Training costs money. People who are training people, you know, I always get snubbed for how much things cost. I've put my life into what I do. And you wouldn't go, if you had a back problem, you know, it's going to cost you exponential amount of more money if you want to go to Harley Street doctor. Why is that? Because that doctor's good.
Yeah, the experience and expertise. So right?
But people don't value us in the same way. People don't value educators of the sea in the same way. They don't see that I paddled all around the world. I have all the experience to keep you and your children safe. They just don't see that as an immediate sense of value. So it's so hard to get people to connect with the idea that if they're going to put themselves in a dangerous environment, which on any day, the ocean can be a dangerous environment, because most people don't read wind charts before they go down to the beach. They see the sun. And they look out their bedroom window and they're going, oh, it's sunny. Let's go to the beach.
Yeah.
And they will go regardless. They don't know the wind's just coming around the corner. Mm. So, yeah, it's a bit of a segue, but
shout out to Baywatch.
Keep
your eye on Baywatch.
That, a bit of a segue from the idea that we keep it coastal.
Yeah.
But the parade is really about raising awareness on the requirement for education. Stand-up paddleboarding is a sport, right? People don't really understand that. They see people down on the beach. Okay, lockdown, the first lockdown when we were allowed out, I went to Cornwall, where my hometown is. And on Gilly Beach, where our first ever business was, bear in mind, that's where stand-up paddleboarding in this country was founded. We had the first paddleboard center in the country, right?
Wow.
No one could buy paddleboards. You could only access the sport if you came to us. And when we were on that beach, after the first lockdown, every single family on the beach had a paddleboard without question. At that point, I knew we were screwed. Our business model was done. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I remember the feeling of looking around going, oh my God, every board on this beach is theirs and not ours.
Yes.
And so, you know, all of those people, they went out and bought boards whilst we were forced to be closed during the lockdowns. They couldn't access our clubs. They couldn't access our training. Mm-hmm. And so they had no awareness that when they were buying a board, there was this whole sport behind it. They just bought a board that was like a glorified beach toy, no more than a beach Lilo to them, you know. Then no awareness about safety, no awareness about the thrill of downwinding or taking your paddleboard into the surf or putting a bag on the front of your board and going off on a 2-day expedition to a beautiful little beach that no one sits on. There was no idea about using your board for fitness and canal expedition or any of these other like beautiful aspects of the sport.
Mm.
And so unfortunately now what's happened is that the majority of people who own a stand-up paddleboard are hobbyists. Mm-hmm. And what that's done is it's diluted the sport. And you can't tell somebody who is a hobbyist paddleboarder that they are not a paddleboarder without sounding like a real, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I get that. But that is the truth, I'm afraid. You know, you can be a hobbyist runner or you could be an athlete, you know. And it's exactly the same for stand-up paddleboarding. I sit in the camp where I want people to respect it as a sport, because me and lots of other people around the world have spent an awful lot of time really caring for the sport. For the first 10 years we had stand-up paddleboarding, before the lockdowns, we were growing this beautiful sport organically, where people would come to us and get really accurate advice on what equipment they should buy. Mm-hmm. We were giving them really honest advice on the level of training they would need for the kind of paddler that they were. And we were helping people to explore all of the aspects of the sport with our club. We were traveling the country, entering races. We were setting up expeditions in Norway. Okay. We set up a retreat in Montenegro. We were doing everything we could do to try and show people the in and out lifestyle of stand-up paddleboarding. Yeah. But then when the lockdowns happened and we all had to close, it completely killed paddleboarding. And now we're in this position where if we don't all get together and stand up for the sport, the hobbyists run the risk of diluting everything that's really special about the sport. It's not their fault. They just don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. Because trying to encourage people to get back into the education aspect of it. And when I say education, I mean, come and experience stand-up paddleboarding. Come and learn what kind of a paddleboarder you could be. Come and learn how to be a fit paddler, a strong paddler, and a skillful paddler. Mm. Then you're a paddleboarder. Then you can go further, faster, for longer, and experience more with more people and do things that are unique and create a human experience that most people never get to experience. That's the message that we have to try and kind of claw back. And I'm in this really crazy dichotomy in my life now where I'm like, do I have the energy to do that all over again? Because I did that once.
Yes.
Or not. Mm. And the paddle parade, I can already get a sense that it is the one thing that really illuminates me. And I think it'd be very hard after something that's as profound as the parade to look over your shoulder and go, nah, it's not worth it. It's probably worth it. So I'll probably end up doing it.
Yeah. Keep doing it over and over again.
Yeah.
I'm curious with the mention of the hobbyist though. Isn't the explosion of the hobbyists, isn't that good for the sport? Because
it's not.
Is it not?
It's not good for the sport.
How do you have someone becoming, you know, getting really, really into it without seeing it as a hobby first? Okay. I'll give you an example. My sister goes out, not every morning, but she'll go out maybe twice a week for the sunrise paddleboard. Mm-hmm. And that's all she does. So I definitely, she would not consider herself myself as well. Like, I'm not a professional paddleboarder, but I don't see the relaxed kind of outlook that I have on paddleboarding a negative element towards paddleboarding.
Mm, of course. No, you're right. You are right.
But it's
not entirely bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It's not entirely bad.
Right.
It's just not helpful.
Okay.
So
is that mainly the safety or is there other elements there as well?
There's two elements.
Yeah.
There's a safety and there's a skill element. Mm. So when you're getting skill handed down from YouTube, you're getting information from your nan's, grand's, sister's, brother who told you once that this is the right thing to do. This is the right piece of safety equipment.
Sure,
this is the right paddle technique. Mm-hmm. This is the way you hold your paddle. This is the height of your paddle.
Yeah.
This is where you stand on your board. And it could all be wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like Chinese whispers. It kind of blows through the parade wildfire. And all of a sudden, before you know it, every one of those hobbyists thinks that they're a specialist because they've been told that's how they do it. We had one on the beach yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Olivia had a private lesson with a lady who had had a lesson on a lake somewhere with somebody. Now, I don't mind holding my hand up and saying, I'm one of the best instructors in the country. I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
All right. I can at least say that.
Yeah.
This lady was adamant that the way she had been taught was just the way she wanted to paddle. So she refused to take any of the instruction on how she should actually hold her paddle, okay, how she should actually stand on her board.
Really?
And she's like, oh, no, I felt more comfortable doing it like this. She looked terrible.
Yeah.
She's a terrible paddler. And there's nothing I could do to help her.
Yeah. And but she'd come to you for a lesson. Interesting. That's very interesting.
Honestly, and it was Olivia who took her out, and Olivia was like pulling her hair out. Yeah. And that's what we're up against. How can you transcend the quality of a sport if it's constantly being handed down in a really diluted way?
No, I get what you're saying. Also, I mean, I gotta say, like, my sister learned from me. She's never gone to it. And I learned by myself. Just I've surfed before, so
just say YouTube. It's okay, Cal.
No, really. Just like
I know.
Yeah, from surfing, then I kind of just went onto the board and kind of figured it out.
And it's fine. Honestly, it is fine. And I say this to everybody. If you're going to be a hobbyist paddler and you want to go out there in the fair weather and you're going to paddle around the bay and you know, categorically, you know that that day is safe, no problem.
Yeah.
There never is until there is.
Yeah, I mean, also what you're saying, you know it's going to be safe. You don't know what you don't know. Like, I've definitely been in some bad situations before.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, you know, to anyone that this offends. But no one has a problem when everything is going right.
You
only have a problem when it's going wrong.
Yeah.
And at what point does it go wrong? At the point when you're not expecting it.
Exactly.
It's when you're paddling along a river in a tidal situation and your leash that you shouldn't be wearing around your ankle gets snagged around a submerged shopping trolley, pulls you in fast flowing water and drowns you within 2 minutes. Yeah. It's when you're paddling around the marina and you fall in wearing a ill-fitting buoyancy aid, and your buoyancy aid gets wrapped around a prop of a boat that pins you under that boat, and you just couldn't even make it up. It's like Final Destination stuff. I've seen it happen. It's when you're paddling along the beautiful, clear, mirror-flat water, and your fin clips a rock because you weren't taught how to paddle not in shallow water. And your 3-year-old child is on the nose of your board and you fall and you crush your child and compress their spine. It's not funny and it's not okay. But when it goes wrong, it's gone wrong because you haven't had the awareness to tell you about all these things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
In one single lesson that you have with us at Soak, we teach you everything about how to maintain your ability to cope in a lesson. That's all that it's about. It's about giving you fundamental paddle skills that allow you to challenge the wind when it's up to 15 miles an hour. Most people wouldn't ever consider the wind speed as being a true factor, as in there's a number, and that magic number is 15. When the wind goes to 16, it becomes extremely physical to paddle to a point where the nose of the board will not stay in the direction that you want it to go, and it can become stressful. And as soon as you become stressed, you become panicked. And when you become panicked, you lose all your strength, and you're falling in the water, you're going into shock, and then, whoa, it's all happened extremely quickly. If you paddle in an offshore wind, yes, you run the risk of being blown out to sea, but if you paddle in an onshore wind, it's going to be choppy and bumpy. You run the risk of falling on rocks and really hurting yourself. There's a lot of nuance to all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not like being a hobbyist runner where all you got to take care of are your 2 feet in a park.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah, I guess that's where my analogy comes from with the having more hobbyists is like better for the sport, because when I think of other sports like running, or
like park running,
even you know, like team sports, even kayaking, I would say when you have those hot, like the definitely with running, it's it's not, I get what you're saying, it's not as dangerous. I mean, you can still fall and stuff, but
you're not going to drown.
Yeah, you're not going to drown. You're not going to be in a situation that you really didn't expect to happen. Whereas with the water and the wind, you can be in a situation that changes within 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I just want to make that point about the kayaking, comparison as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because, kayaking has a really long and respected series of safety protocols. What's the primary difference between a kayak that you sit in and a stand-up paddleboard?
Well, the paddleboard can pop, as we touched upon earlier.
The paddleboard can pop. The kayak can sink, right? So every kayaker out there, absolutely, they're not wearing a leash attached to their boat, because that would be ridiculous and dangerous, but their boats sink, right? So when you're Canadian canoeing down the Yukon River, you need to wear a buoyancy aid, because if your boat fills up with water in a rapid, you're going to drown and die. If you're in a kayak and you're paddling around the coastline here, you need to wear a buoyancy, because if you capsize your boat and it fills up with water, you're going to die.
Yeah.
With a paddleboard, you don't have that kind of same risk. However, I just want to make this point about buoyancy aids, because I think that people are really on the fence about it. If you are an amateur paddleboarder, you should wear a buoyancy aid. I just want to make that really clear. Mm. But you shouldn't just wear any buoyancy aid. Mm-hmm. You need to wear a buoyancy aid that enables you to recover yourself back to your board. You can't, so this issue is fundamental to my kind of rationality around safety. Mm-hmm. A lot of paddleboarders are women. What do women have that guys don't have? They have the boobs, right? And the boobs create an extra barrier underneath for you getting on that board. So if you've got a buoyancy aid and you've got the boobs, you've got this shelf in front of you, it really restricts your ability to climb back onto the board. It's really dangerous, because women also, they struggle with the upper body strength a lot of the time.
Yeah, you can't get back on it.
Getting back on the board is really tough. And that's where I would say, I think we got a statistic, it's something like 83% of all the rescues we ever do, not to do with our business, but we're rescuing other people because they can't get back on their board because of their buoyancy aid. So it's not just about wearing any buoyancy aid. You need to wear a buoyancy aid that has 50 newtons of flotation, so it's going to absolutely keep you afloat. You need to really wear a jacket type buoyancy aid, so that enables you to have as low a profile at the front of your body as possible, so that you can climb yourself back onto your board as easy as you can. And you need to get out there and practice that.
Yes.
And the only reason that you don't need to wear a buoyancy aid is because if you're really experienced, buoyancy aids, when you're stand up paddleboarding, are uncomfortable and clunky. And for most people's dynamic risk assessment, if they understand the wind and weather and forecasting long range, and they understand that you do not paddle further away from the coast and you absolutely swim, then can swim back. And you've done a float plan, which means that you've told someone where you're going and you've got a form of communication that will enable you to contact them or then contact you. You told them when you're coming back so they can expect you or call for help if you haven't turned up on time.
Yeah.
If you've done all of that stuff, check, and then you decide for your personal reason that you don't wear a buoyancy aid, so long as you have a leash, you are connected to the biggest life raft that you could have. Now, you make a really good point about your board could pop. Mm-hmm. True. I've always used Fanatic, okay? Shout out to Fanatic UK, Nick Baker. We've been with them for the last 14 years. We've used them because we have never, ever in the whole history of my time with them encountered an issue with their equipment like the ones that we're describing. We have bought hundreds of boards over the years that we've been in business there. And we decided to be a specialist and only work with one brand for this very one reason: we could trust it.
Yeah.
And if there was a problem with manufacturing or warranty issue, I knew that I could call Nick and I could say, Nick, there's a problem. There hasn't been. We've had problems with paddles in the early days. They were aluminium. They used to sink and it was like, but that was everybody. The school paddles, that was. But never a problem with the boards. Now, some people will say, well, I've had problems with my Fanatic board. Yes. I'm not saying there haven't been problems. I'm saying we haven't had problems. Yeah, sure. And when you're looking out there at the range of equipment, there is a lot of equipment out there that you can choose from these days. We just chose one that we thought we could trust. It's really, really important to us. So safety isn't just about wearing a buoyancy aid or wearing the leash. It's about having good quality equipment.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry that in the end, a lot of good quality equipment is expensive, but you cannot berate the sport or paddleboarding or paddleboarders for that fact. It's like anything. You want to go and race a car. What do you want to race? You want to race a Fiat 500 or an Aston Martin Vantage.
Yeah.
What do you really want to race? You
right. know?
But I mean, going back to my sister, for example, if she's just going out on the very calm water on the sunrise for half an hour a sesh, and she's that's all she wants.
Absolutely.
But don't go further than you can swim. That was the initial point.
She's hugging the coastline.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even think she paddles that far. I think she just gets onto the board, kind of chills there for half an hour, gets back.
That is such a beautiful aspect of the sport. Yeah. And let me just clarify this.
Yeah.
Those moments where you're out there, let's say you're someone who is not a waterman or a waterwoman, right? That ability to just get out there and glide to the sunset is one of the most life-affirming aspects of the sport. You don't need to be a good paddleboarder to do that. All you need to do is the basic safety checks. Is the weather going to allow me to get home? Check. Does someone know where I am? Check. Am I wearing a buoyancy aid or the appropriate safety equipment for my ability? Check. Cool. Yeah. Let's go see the sunset.
Yeah.
But if you don't know that you need to know that stuff, then you're putting yourself at risk.
I think that's why this conversation is super important, actually.
So important.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to the safety stuff.
I don't want to fearmonger about it. I don't want to turn people off of the sport. That's not my job.
Yeah.
But my job as an educator is to ensure that people are aware of the importance of training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even just the risk. It's just the very basics of training.
Yeah.
The risks are absolutely what you have to know, right? But it's better that you go and get educated and trained, because it's one of the same things. By getting the training, you mitigate the risk.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. And so, you know, I will bang the drum for that for all time.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you made a lot of really good points about water safety. And I understand that you're the partners in the Great Big Paddle Parade are, one of them's RNLI. Can you tell us about some other partners that you're working with and maybe give some shout outs to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my favorites right now are Shark Sup. They're all my favorites, all right? But this is the most exciting one for me right now. In fact, there's two really exciting ones. There's the Sup Surfaces and Shark Sup. So Shark Sup are a board brand that's been around forever. It's owned by a Chinese guy called Alan, and he's got a UK team, including some of the guys over at Sup Board and Mag, who are helping develop this brand into this like really high quality kind of brand for the people. It's at a medium price point. You're talking like £600 for a really high quality double skin board that can inflate to 25 PSI. Most boards at the moment, if you buy a cheap board right now, you're getting a maximum of 18, but a lot of these are 15.
Ours that we have is 11 to 13.
Oh my God. You are on a Lilo.
Yeah, you're on a Lilo, bro. All right. These boards at 25 PSI feel like the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rigid board that gives you the ability to glide. Yeah. And when you're out on the water and you're trying to challenge the environment, you need a board that glides.
Yeah.
And that's what Shark Sup do. It's very simple range. They have all of what you need and nothing of what you don't. And it will just help people to kind of navigate what equipment they need. We're about to become the UK's first dedicated demo center for Shark. So it means that you'll be able to come down, see me. I can give you specialist training on a specialist piece of kit that suits your type of paddling. Now, we started this kind of model way back in the day with Fanatic, right? Fanatic are an extremely big international company. And the ability to be kind of dynamic and pivot with them has just changed now from the early days, because the sport's so big. Massive respect to them. Big up to Nick Baker. He's my man. Always will be. We started something together, and I'll never turn my back on that. But the ability to be dynamic and have different conversations is really important.
Yes.
Fanatic is a fantastic board brand with an incredible pedigree. They have taken like probably 30 years of R&D to get to where they are right now with the way that they build their equipment. Shark Sup have the intelligence of the industry behind them as well. The guys at Sup Border, Gary at Sup Inflatables, these are true paddlers who are helping Alan in China build the best quality boards that we can possibly build. And so we're really excited that they've come on board to sponsor the Great Big Paddle Parade. They've sponsored the course. So when you see the 16 markers out there, those marker boys arrived from China yesterday after having been stuck in customs. And oh my God, man.
Oh, what a headache.
They were supposed to be here 2 weeks ago and we've been like, ah! They literally arrived yesterday. So yeah, they sponsored the course, they sponsored the medal, and they're just fantastic ambassadors of what we're about to do in the future. Yeah. And their mantra of constant forward motion is totally aligned to me and to the parade and also to the sport, you know, like, that feeling of forward motion is growth, in my opinion. Mm. And everyone loves a bit of growth, right? I think that's a really beautiful thing about humans.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
For so sure. Shark, I like to give it up to Shark. And then we've got SUP Services. So Paul and his lovely family who've been hoarded into his business as he's grown so big now. Paul is saving hundreds, I'd say thousands of boards going to landfill these days.
Wow.
It's a thing that people don't think about, right? But if you buy a cheap piece of kit that blows up on you, has cheap glue, cheap valves, something else like that, let's say it doesn't go to landfill, maybe it just gets rolled up and put in your loft, eventually it will go to landfill, mm-hmm. right? Paul is doing factory standard repairs of any ailment that your board has. And they're certified as well. So, you know, he absolutely stands by his work. He's repaired all of our equipment season on season. It's meant we used to have to replace our season by season, our equipment by seasonally. So every autumn, winter, new boards, every spring, summer, new boards. Because again, they were getting a lot of use.
Yeah.
So things like the handles, grip deck, and kind of like abrasions from getting scratched on barnacles and stuff like that. Mm. They need the odd repair here and there. And Paul's repaired ours for the last two seasons now, which means that we don't have to move the boards on. It means we can keep those boards. Yeah, they got patches on. And yeah, they may be, well, he actually cleans them to a point like they come back immaculate. It's amazing. Yeah. Oh. So I couldn't even say they're grubby, but they have patches on. Yeah. And there's a little bit of a war wound on them in some places, but they are brilliant and certified. So it means that if you end up with one of these boards, you know it's still going to last you another 6 years. And if it doesn't, you can send it back to Paul and he'll just repair it.
Where's Paul based?
So Paul's just based in just outside of Taunton. Okay. And so we're running this thing. We're still working out the details, but what it feels like, you're going to be able to drop your board off to us down at Soak on a Friday and get it back the following week. So we're trying to cut out the DHL deliveries and all that sort of stuff, because that's another big part of it.
The environment. All those deliveries and everything. So if you do it once a week. Yeah, it's like a service.
Yeah, that's as a service.
Right.
It saves the boards going to landfill. It means less deliveries and all that sort of stuff. So we're trying to think of how we can become a carbon neutral business. One of the things we need to do is get solar on our roof, obviously an obvious one. The other is, how can we lessen our impact on the environment with the way that we act within the sport? And I think that this one thing, working with SUP Services, is a really brilliant opportunity for us to make quite a big impact on the way that we manage our kind of environmental responsibility in sport.
Yeah, I agree. If you think about like the whole kind of supply chain that goes on with paddleboarding, you know, you've got like really high quality suppliers. Now you've got really high quality repair. You're doing all of your training. You're doing all of your safety. So you are like kind of getting involved with every aspect of paddleboarding. It's really good.
I got to give another shout out to Jan over at K. Elliott Architects as well.
Hey, Jan.
Yeah, Jan's great.
We love Jan.
I love their whole company. Everyone there's so sound. They came to us for like a team building day and they were really fun. Jan is quite obsessed by his crane over there, which is quite fun. We had to paddle over there and see their crane.
To go see the crane.
Which is quite fun. But they're actually funding the production of a video and the photography for the parade this year. So last year we didn't have any really, really good quality media to lean on for the marketing this year. With what we captured this year from my friend Jack, who's coming up to run it from his media company in Cornwall, he is going to do a fantastic job. So thank you to Jan at K. Elliott as well for organizing. I also have to give a shout out to the English Riviera. Carolyn and her team are so supportive of what we've been doing. I'm not just saying that. I mean it. Like last year they helped fund the parade, which was really important to get it going. This year we didn't lean on that funding. I funded it myself just to make sure that it was de-risked for everyone. But they've been really great support.
Great.
Banging the drum for
Hi,
it.
Hi, Caroline.
And, and also it's great to just be doing something that has, you know, perfect synergy with the coastline. We're doing that together. You know, I think it's really important that everyone that is doing something for Torbay at large should come together, because it's the one thing about this town that I'm new here. I've been here since 2019. I moved it just before the lockdown because of the lockdowns. And I feel like there is so much wonderful stuff going on, and not a place where it is all centralized. In Cornwall, it's kind of, it feels easy to be a part of a community because the places are really small. Torbay is massive.
It is.
It's very easy to feel lost here. So working with Carolyn, helping us to kind of like, you know, bring people together with this English Riviera mantra is really useful.
Yeah, definitely. That's
Shark
good.
Sup is, sorry, not Shark Sup. The Shark Trust, they're another new partner as well.
Shark Trust?
Shark Trust. So Shark Trust are working hand in hand with Shark Sup.
Okay.
Shark Sup are a, they're a corporate sponsor for Shark Trust now, which means a percentage of Shark Sup's profits go directly to the Shark Trust. They're not a related company,
sure.
But Shark Trust basically, they look after really high level litigation that's supporting the shark population of the world. So they basically write legislation all around the world that helps protect sharks, essentially.
Okay, yeah.
When you look into what the Shark Trust do, it is really intense. You know, the work that has to go on from a bunch of lawyers is absolutely unreal. And it's not very exciting to think about the actual practical work they do, but what is very exciting is the result of the work that they do. So protecting shark species around the world is literally like protecting apex predators, right? It's protecting every aspect of the ocean's food chain that comes below. That serves you and I. If you're a fish eater, that serves you and I. But for so many reasons, the Shark Trust is an incredibly important charity. And so they've come on board this year. You'll be able to meet them. Some of their directors are coming to the event.
Beautiful.
It's a brand new relationship. But what we're hoping to do with Soak, Shark Trust has a few initiatives that engage kids in the coastline.
Oh, wow.
Things like going out, finding the little mermaid purses and stuff like that, seeing what shark habitats are local to you. We're going to work with Shark Trust to kind of have a conversation that is not just about plastic in the ocean. It's actually about the habitats themselves. And we want to find a way of how we can explore the habitats of the bay, get people snorkeling and experiencing the underwater kelp forests that are here. Most people don't know that there's one of the most unbelievably beautiful natural reefs around this coastline in the whole country. It's outrageous. There are so many plant species and marine wildlife species out here, bird species. It's incomprehensible. And so I think that whilst the conversation around cleaning up the oceans, plastic is a very important one. You probably have seen the news that they've got this massive rig out in the Pacific, cleaning up the Pacific garbage patch, right?
Yeah.
What that tells me is that we are finally in a situation where we're able to technologize our way into these, out to solve these problems. And they have created a microbiome that dissolves plastic using these funny little parasites or whatever they are. And so you're like, oh my god, like they are literally technologizing our way into the solution around plastic. There is a massive conversation about still reducing our use of plastic,
of course,
obviously.
Yes.
This is not a situation that is over. However, it is being taken care of and everyone is aware. My kids are aware. My kids are horrified if they see someone drop some plastic on so you know, the work is being done really successfully. I think the job of inspiring people about wildlife and conservation is another thing that's really interesting. It's just another thing. It's not an either or, but for me, I've been doing the job around cleaning up plastics, cleaning up the ocean with companies like the Plastic Patrol for years. I'm really excited about a new narrative of conservation now, working with the Shark Trust, them coming on board with Shark Sup and supporting us with this event. It's another really exciting
thing. So is the Shark Trust, are they based in the UK?
They're based just down the road in Devon, yeah.
But they
yeah.
That's bizarre for me.
It's mad.
Right?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Exmouth is still in Devon, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think it's something like that.
That's crazy. Because, I mean, So they're doing work all around the globe, you're saying?
All around the world.
And they're based in Devon.
You wouldn't believe the companies that are based there. You know, well, Devon and Cornwall have some of the most exciting enterprises ever. I mean, if you go up to Epic Center just up the road.
Oh my God, don't get me started.
Right.
That's my favorite subject, the Epic Center.
Right. If you go to Cornwall, there's an industrial estate in Cornwall that looks like you wouldn't want to park your car there. They're doing the most advanced robotics and AI in the world, in a little industrial state in Penryn. Devon and Cornwall would shock you of what goes on here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it shocks me because, like, sharks-wise, you don't think UK and sharks. I know we've got basking sharks.
Yeah, let's not tell everyone.
Yeah, yeah. It's not good for business, Cal.
I can tell you a fantastic story about sharks.
But yeah, go on. This is what podcasts are for, Sean. Get loose.
So I never realized I was afraid of sharks until I went to Mauritius on a dealer convention with Fnatic. And I've got two really good stories, but this one was particularly good because we were paddle surfing in the outer reef. So we went out through the first reef, the inner reef, and then we were going for the big surf out the back. Now, Nick, it's just me and Nick, and Nick's paddling out, and I see this massive black thing breach the water. And at the time, they were like these jumping manta rays. They were jumping out of the water. And it was like, wow, isn't that amazing? And Nick was quite far in front. And then the thing jumped out of the water, snatched her. Bloody ray, and I just went into shock immediately. And Nick has already gone, and it started getting windy.
Bye.
And I was like, I couldn't even stand on my board. I'm on this tiny little eight foot pro surf, and I get down to my knees, and I fell in the water, and the water's crystal clear. You can see under there, right? And from that second until about 12 minutes when I got back to the beach, I was in blind panic and everything looked like a shark, everything. And I got tumbled in the inner reef and I got back to the beach and I've tried to like raise the alarm here that there's this shark out there and Nick's gone out and I was really worried about him because I lost sight of him and he didn't know I'd gone back. Nick's like a hardcore surfer. He's surfed the biggest waves in the world on a windsurf board, right? He's a world famous waterman. So I know he's fine, but I said, can you please just go out in the boat and just check on him? Nick had got tumbled in the outer reef on a big set and dislocated his shoulder. And so there's probably a very good chance that he would have really, really struggled back if I hadn't sent that boat out to him. But from that point on, I realized how scared I was of sharks. Yeah. And I got one more story about sharks because we have blue sharks in this country. Okay. And they're not dangerous, but they're very curious. And they're actually an amazing amount of sharks in this country. If you really look into it, basking sharks, totally harmless. Blue sharks, harmless. They give you a little nip, maybe. I was in New Zealand and we were swimming with the dusky dolphins. Do you know what they are? Mm-mm. They're like this beautifully curious, friendly dolphin. And they've got these trips that you do in Kaikoura out there. And you go out on the boat and they drop you in the ocean and you make all the noises under the water. You're clapping your hands, you're making whatever noise you can. The duskies come around you and they swim around you. It's actually amazing. Like they're spiraling around you and it's like the most unreal dolphin experience you could ever have. And this was the second day that we were going out to the duskies. And you're free diving, so I've swum down and the dolphins weren't around and I'm looking around and all of a sudden I look like this and there's a blue shark right there, this close to me, and I can see his big round eye and I shit myself. And instead of swimming straight up to the top, I bolt like away, tried to get away from it, and I'm swimming panicked. And I stop and I look around and the fucking thing is still right there. It like it hasn't moved. I put in all my energy to get away from the thing and it's just right there next to me. So I bolt up to the top and I can't catch my breath and the boat is just there. And I wanted to scream shark, but there are all these people in the water. And I quickly kind of composed myself, thought that would be a terrible idea. I swam back to the boat really fast, got on the boat, told the guy on the boat, I'd just seen a shark and I'm very scared.
Yeah.
And he really calmly went out the back, collected everybody like nothing had happened, and we went off.
Okay.
And I was so curious about his response to this because I was thinking, surely like somebody should have been like this should be more urgent and everybody should know, but they asked me not to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I learned that Kaikoura is absolutely and totally dependent on these dusky dolphin tours. Mm. Would you get in the sea if you knew that there were sharks in there?
Yeah.
So they don't talk about it because it would ruin their industry.
But so, is it just blue sharks that they have?
Or no, they have all sorts of sharks. But we're not talking about it.
No, we're not talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, but there are sharks, lots of sharks in the UK's water. And you keep hearing these stories about, you know, there are great whites and stuff like that coming. Well, you know,
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, yeah. You keep hearing the stories about it. And we should all be very real that the climate is changing. Yeah. You know, whatever you believe, why that's changing, whether you believe that it's just a cycle of the world or whether you really believe that we are the primary responsible factors of that, it doesn't matter. It's happening. And so with the world's oceans warming, you are going to get animals migrating into different regions of the world. Fact. And so it doesn't surprise me. Whatever comes our way will come our way. But the Australians live with it. Everyone lives with it. Yeah. It's all good. You know, no one's getting eaten yet. Yeah. I'll worry when the first person gets eaten. I hope it's not me.
I think that is a huge part of it, though. This is like if you believe in climate change. But I think you made a really valid point that, you know, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. It's the fact that it's happening. But I think the thing about belief is that if you believe that it's man-made, then you have to take responsibility for it. And then you have to do something about it. So, yeah, I think that's the camp that we're in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely have to do something about it. We're interested in, yeah, everything coastal. And we're in particular Beacon Cove right next door.
Yeah.
So we'd like to get involved with the seagrass and the seahorses and things like that. It is important. Do you think that climate change is pushing some of the dolphins like closer to people? There's so much wildlife. It seems like either people have more cameras or there's more boats or there's more dolphins. What do you think?
I probably would say that is a bit of a combination of all of it, isn't it? I mean, growing up, I don't remember feeling like I saw dolphins as often as I see them now.
Me too.
So I'm not an expert. I do know they got a marine and natural history photography course down in Cornwall, in Falmouth, where I'm from. And they have a trip out there where they do go out and see wildlife quite regularly off of the coastline. I think it's called AK Wildlife or something like that, potentially. And I know that because the students used to go off and they would use the students to do their photography, mm-hmm. basically slave labor, and for free. And yeah, there was a lot of wildlife. And I remember being out and seeing Rizzo dolphins on our paddleboard one year. And I saw like the tiniest little common dolphin what are they called?
Pups?
Are they pups?
I think they're pups.
I don't know what they are. I have no
idea. Baby dolphin.
Baby dolphin.
Yeah,
little cute baby dolphin. And but nowadays, I mean, Torquay Water Sports, they are posting, it's like every day.
Yeah.
They may tell you that it's not that often. They may tell you that actually it's not as often as we probably perceive it to be. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. But I think that climate change is having an effect on other areas in the world in a way more profound way than it does for us because of where we sit in the jet stream. The way the world is on its axis means that I don't think we're exposed to the mm-hmm. to the massive kind of like the wildfires that happened down in Italy, right? You know where that happened? So the jet stream had positioned itself in this really crazy way where it had these big loops in it all around the world. And it meant there were these equal and opposite pressure systems that were, so you got
just wait before you carry on. Jet stream, can you explain exactly
so, what that means? Yeah, a jet stream is basically,
it's like an atmospheric river.
Almost. Yeah, yeah, it's an atmospheric wind. River. Exactly. It's where the wind travels, right? So you get all of the warm air traveling at altitude around the world, and it moves in this flow, and it's kind of directed by pressure systems. So high pressure, low pressure systems, and they pin the jet stream and they affect the way that it bends around the world, right? Can you kind of imagine that? And if you have an equal pressure, like an equal high and an equal low, it pins the jet stream there, right? And what was happening, if you can imagine, let's say you imagine 10 footballs all in a straight line,
sure.
and then move each, how do you say, the one football up, one football down.
Yeah.
That is an equal and opposite high and low pressure system. That was happening all around the world. So you have these kind of like, these tails of heat and and these pockets of heat, sorry, that are just stuck because the high pressure isn't moving the low pressure and the low pressure isn't moving the high pressure.
Because they're the same.
They're the same.
Yeah.
So, same pressure. So you end up with like one concentrated kind of like heat source. And that's what was causing kind of these problems down in the south of Europe, yeah, and also causing the problems over on the west coast of America.
Yeah, I heard heat dome.
Heat
they
dome.
Were calling them heat domes.
That's exactly
it. Yeah, but there's like these like footballs, I guess.
That's exactly
it.
Footballs. And then when the pressure system finally change, the high pressure will merge a low pressure somewhere else, and you end up with these kind of, you need pressure systems different so it moves the world's weather around, mm, so that you don't end up with these heat domes. And I only know this, by the way, because I have been psychotically watching the weather for the parade. And the Met Office is an amazing resource when you really get into it.
Yeah.
And they do this this jet stream analysis every week. And you can go on there and they like, do this 10-day range forecast, and it shows you how the jet stream is moving. And it's really amazing. I think there's something like, I think it's about 5 supercomputers all around the world that pool data to create the algorithms that allow us to predict the weather. And the way that I kind of see it is that high pressure weather seems really easy to predict. Low pressure weather is really turbulent and really difficult to predict. And we've been sat in this like area of low pressure in the UK, okay, which has caused no one day to be the same. You know how you've woken up every morning and it's been flat, and then by the afternoon it's been windy and bumpy and cold and rainy. Mm-hmm. That's low pressure.
Right.
Really hard to forecast.
Interesting. So you're saying we lie outside of that jet stream.
This time.
This time.
Last year, we had that amazing heat wave.
Yeah.
We were the other side of that. So the jet stream pinned our high pressure in. And so we had sustained weather for a period of time. This time we had low pressure pinned in. And that low pressure was us and Scandinavia and parts of Russia and you know, all that part above us.
Okay.
We were just really unlucky. Oh, it went down kind of like, I think it was kind of like as far as the middle of France, and then it kind of did this loop. So everything south of France down to Italy, they were like literally on fire. Yeah. And everyone else was having horrendous weather like we were, even like north of France, where they would normally expect really good weather. Northern Italy, all those Northern Europe places, they were suffering the same kind of weather as us.
Yeah. It is getting more extreme. I've heard, I've been following the hurricane that's just hit in Florida. And they're saying now, because the Gulf of Mexico is so warm, it's like, I don't have it in Celsius because I'm listening to, you know, like the American news channel, but like 83 degrees Fahrenheit, but it's been measured at almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
And which is, I don't know what that is, like 40 Celsius or something, for an ocean.
Yeah.
And so when this hurricane is spinning around, it started as a tropical storm. And as it was approaching land, it just kept getting stronger and stronger, where usually it would be dying out and getting weaker. The hot water in the Gulf of Mexico was actually like feeding this hurricane and making it even stronger. And it, you know, it hit land, I guess, yesterday at a category 3, 125 mile an hour sustained winds. It's wild out there.
I watched that. Well, I heard the same thing, right? That the water in Florida is unfit for pregnant women to be in.
Oh,
it's
really?
Too hot.
Too hot. It's too killing hot the pregnant, reefs. It's
too hot
killing
for pregnant
fish.
Women.
Crazy.
Yeah. And
so wait, should pregnant women not take warm baths?
No, there's something about the amount of time that they should spend in it.
Okay.
And it's the same for children in saunas and stuff like this. You know, like that's why children can't go in saunas and steam rooms and jacuzzis and things, because there's like, I don't know what the risks are.
Yeah, it's like.
But to hear that the ocean is too hot for some humans to be in, I was like, what?
It's an ocean. Yeah, I know, it should be freezing cold. Trust me, at Preston, it's cold. So yeah, that's brilliant. Weren't you just talking about a sauna? Did you have plans that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think.
When's the build start?
Give me some money?
Off mic, we were talking off mic about like Sean's plans for Soak and what's going to happen over the winter and things like that. And he's able to share some exciting news or some, you know, some dreams that he's got. So
yeah, I think I don't want to segue too far from we've gone on a massive tangent from why we paddle around the coastline.
Anyway.
I think the last question was where is the route?
And we've gone through
climate change and new world orders.
Okay. Right. Well, we don't have to get into that, but we'd like to have you back on maybe in a few months' time, and you can tell us about some plans that you'd have for SOAP.
And show us the pictures of the paddle parade. Yeah, I want to see the 1,000 people.
You're going to be 1,000 people, aren't you going to be?
Yeah.
You're going to go, okay.
I just want to quickly tell everyone actually what the details are for this event.
Yes. Sorry.
Because that hasn't happened yet. So I was saying that the parade goes from the three locations. It was going to go from six, but we've tracked it down to three now.
Sure.
Tor Abbey Sands, everyone departs there at 9:30 in the morning.
And that's the very competent.
That's the competent paddlers. Sure. So everyone who is a true paddleboarder, they will be able to leave from there, and we will paddle in constant forward motion up to Goodrington. We will arrive at Goodrington at 11 o'clock. So the people at Goodrington, they'll be getting on the water at about 5 to 11.
Okay.
They'll follow the tail of the parade from Abbey Sands. We then move on to Broad Sands and we pick them up at 11:30. So those people will get on the water about 11:25, and then as one big parade we then paddle into Elbury Cove and up to Fishcombe Cove, where we do this loop to paddle back again, and we do the adjudication up there with a drone. So we take a picture and then we use AI to count everybody, and then we will paddle home. It's like the world's longest conga line. You know, it really is a guided parade. It's not a race.
I'm guessing if you start at Abbey Sands, you finish at Abbey Sands. If you start at Goodrington, you finish at Goodrington. If you start at Broad Sands, you finish at Broad Sands.
That's correct.
Yeah?
It's a really important part of our safety protocol, because we need to be able to check everyone in and out of the water. Mm. We're asking everybody to start from a location that they can finish at, because we can't just have people getting off of the water anywhere they like and kind of like losing track of where people are. Then it kind of gets dangerous. So we've got a register system, an on-land register keeper. So anyone that leaves the water permanently, we check them off. People will only get their medal actually if they finish at the location that they start from. Mm-hmm. So when everyone gets off of the water, they have to come and check out. They receive their medal at that point.
Tickets? You mentioned tickets
online. If you search, the tickets are on Eventbrite.
Yeah.
If you search the paddle parade on Eventbrite, you get tickets, no problem. But on our website, which is soaklifestyle.co.uk, we got a page on there, and you'll easily be able to find links to the tickets there too.
Cool. Perfect.
Yeah.
Nice.
And yeah, we're asking that everybody wears buoyancy aids. It's absolutely compulsory that you wear leashes. And, you know, if I could enforce it in a way that was really meaningful, I was really hoping for some messaging from kind of like key safety authorities. We haven't had it this season, so I haven't been able to enforce it in the way that I would like to. But we're just asking that everybody just really takes responsibility for their safety. I wanted to kind of like everyone to wear buoyancy aid as a sign of protest, you know, like wear a buoyancy aid, even if you don't believe in it, just as a flag in the sand for safety. Mm-hmm. But we've not been able to get that campaign together because the corporates are corporate, you know, and the messaging is really tricky for them to get out in any kind of quick or meaningful way.
Yeah.
So next season, we'll bang that drum.
Nice. And so who does the paddle parade benefit? Is it some of the money goes to the RNLI?
Yeah. So 100% of the profits go to the RNLI. I just want to make 100%. This really clear.
Right.
Right. So when you buy your ticket, out of that, the cost, they come insurance, graphic design, equipment that we need to run the parade, wristbands, number bibs, that sort of stuff. We've tried to save as much money as possible by like merchandise, for instance. We haven't bought merchandise this year, so it's not an overhead. You go onto T-Mill, we set up a platform there, and you can just order your t-shirt and it just gets drop shipped directly to you, so we're not having to hold stock, things like that. We're working hard to make sure that as much of the donation goes to charity as possible. No one gets paid, you know. When I say no one, me, it's only me. You know, it's benefiting the RNLI financially, and it's benefiting the people, my people, our people, emotionally, you know, like this is just one of the most beautiful things we can do, getting together to share this energy with each other. And, you know, in this environment, it's really special, and we are going to have good weather. So yeah, all those hobbyists, fair weather paddlers out there, man, it's your day. Yeah, it
is your day. Nice. And just on a personal note, I wanted to take you on a rapid fire round. Are you ready, Sean? Rapid fire. Let's do it.
Rapid.
Right. Now, what's the best restaurant?
The best restaurant is in Dartmouth. Luca owns Andrea, and I'm sorry, but it's the best restaurant in Devon, in my opinion.
I have heard so much about Andrea. So shout out to who? Luca?
Luca. Yeah, he's the man. Yeah.
I saw there's a reel, I think it's on the Soak Lifestyle Instagram, about your visit there. Yeah. Beautiful. And who's got the best burger?
Oh, wow, that's a really tough one. Well, who's got the best burger? Where have I been for a really good burger recently? I literally couldn't answer that. Because I don't really eat them when I go out. So.
Oh, no? Because you're in Dartmouth and Andrea.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they have burgers over there.
No. Well, yes. I can't answer it. I'm froze. Sorry.
That's fine. So where's the best beach?
Oh, now, my favorite beach, I think I fell in love with Devon at Elbury Cove.
Yes.
But it's a pebble beach. It's not a sandy beach, but it's got a really special energy there.
Yeah.
And I would say that if you're talking about Torbay, Elbury Cove is my favorite little local space.
And what about in the world?
In the world, oh my goodness, that is such a big... I've been to so many beaches in the world. There's a beach on the north part of the South Island in New Zealand, which is really, really special.
How so? Why is it special?
It's the quality of the sand, the quality of the water, the marine life there. It's paradise. The palm trees. It's real paradise, you know. But then also, I grew up in Hale, down in Cornwall, and they got 3 miles of golden sand and sand dunes that I've got some of my best memories ever at. So I'd be really, really torn between those spaces. That beach on, I can't remember what the area is called now. I really wish I could. I'm not very good at this kind of thing. But yeah, New Zealand, I found my best beaches. Oh no, that is, I'm so sorry. Scotland just came to mind.
Oh. Where?
Total curveball. If you go to on the NC500, so Laura and I did that just out of the first lockdown. We got in our van and we drove the North Coast 500 route around Scotland. It will take you around scenery that is like devastatingly beautiful.
Really?
Like you can't believe you're in this country, from kind of like fjords and archipelagos, mountains and moors. The environment there is just outrageous. And if you go there when it's grey and drizzly, it's even better. It's like, it lends itself to being this dramatic, like, landscape. And they have beaches that are so white and so clear on the water, you would think you were in Mauritius. Like, yeah, sorry, but Scotland has actually got the best beaches.
Would you know where about these beaches are?
If you... Just trying to think
about... West Coast, East Coast?
Yeah, West Coast.
West Coast.
Over on the West Coast.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah,
but also on the very north part of the island, under Orkney as well. Even on Orkney and some of the Outer Hebrides, all the beaches are just dazzling. It would blow your mind. If you get it... We had some warm days when we were there as well, and no one's on them. No one's there. No one's in Scotland. No one's in the north part of Scotland. People who live in Glasgow and Edinburgh don't go up that far. I mean, because it is far. When you get to Scotland and you've driven like 8 hours to get there, you then drive another 8 hours on A Road to get to the north of Scotland.
Wow.
So people just don't go.
No.
But Scotland's got the best beaches, and Elbury Cove is the most favorite little local spot.
Favorite local spot. All right. Now, where can we find the Soak Lifestyle team after hours, after dark? Where do you guys hang out?
Laura and I have just found one of our favorite new little hangouts. You're going to have to help me remember what it's called, because again, I'm terrible at it. You know, I start off all my paddleboard lessons with, my name's Sean. You can call me whatever you like, because I'm really sorry, I'm terrible with names. And And so there's a place that's in Wellswood. It's an Italian.
Portofino. Owned by Ollie's. Right. Shout out Ollie's and Lucinda and Howard.
Yeah.
And Howard.
Yeah. Honestly, we had the staff make a place, right?
Yes.
And I think that was the thing that was always really special about Wisa. We didn't always get it right. Okay. Sometimes coffee was slow because we were busy and overwhelmed. Sometimes the food wasn't absolutely perfect because we had 10 different chefs quit in that one day. However, our team, the people that served you, loved what they did.
Yeah.
And we created an environment there that was really special.
Yeah.
Portofino, the lights were on point. The playlist was so good. I think he got it from Wisa. And the team were so great. They were so attentive, so friendly, so welcoming. It just added this energy that's very difficult to find in certain places. So shout out to Portofino. That's going to be our new favorite hangout spot.
Nice. Well, I'll see you there.
You like it there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was there last Friday with my girlfriends. And yeah, it's just always a good vibe. And you know what's nice about Portofino? If you go on like a Friday night, like, you know people there.
Yeah.
It's like you bump into old friends and you know, you catch up with, you know what I mean? It's like a really nice community almost that's coming up there. So yeah, it's brilliant.
I found that place, I was really struggling. Mm. I was thinking, am I going to be able to stay here? Because I've been really lacking that sense of kind of culture and community, and exactly what you described, bumping into old friends.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to do here for some reason. And it's not that there isn't a great community, you know, it exists. But Portofino really felt like a little bit of something that happens elsewhere. And so for that reason, I think it's probably one of my favorite spots I visited recently.
All right, super. So yeah, so guys, this Saturday, it's Saturday, 2nd of September, the Great Big Paddle Parade starting at 9:30 in the morning. Be down on Abbey Sands.
Can I just say the best place to watch it? Sorry.
Ooh, the best place to...
Yeah.
Because
this office.
Yeah, because, yes, actually.
Because it starts from three different locations.
Yeah.
Obviously, sorry to interrupt you then. The best place you could watch it would be from the green at down at Broad Sands Beach. So between Broad Sands and Broad Sands and Elbury Cove.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason being is that if there are a lot of people, which there could be because it's a nice day, you've got the bank there, but that's where all of the paddlers will be accumulated. Uh-huh. So you'll be able to see us all glide by into Elbury Cove and then onto Fishcombe. Fishcombe Cove is quite small. So a lot of people, you know, if you want to try and find a spot to view us from Fishcombe Beach, cool. But it's probably be quite tricky, I'd imagine.
I think so.
Yeah, well, Broad Sands has parking for 1,000 cars and like an easy way.
Also, but on Fishcombe, wouldn't you be cut off by the rock? Like, you wouldn't be able to see.
We're going to come into Fishcombe Cove.
No, but I'm saying, like, if you want to, like, here, you could see pretty much the whole
thing. Oh, yeah.
Just the Fishcombe, vistas.
You just see everyone come in and go out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what do you do? You park up at Broad Sands and then you walk up onto kind of the meadow in between Broad Sands and Elbury Cove. It's like a half a mile walk or something. And then, you'll be able to see you just coming around. Well, and then it turns into something to look at for kind of, maybe it'll take you kind of 10, 15 minutes to go past, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Or 10 minutes?
About between 5 and 10 minutes, really.
Yeah. Well, depending on how who's at the back.
Yeah.
It's not going to be me.
In fact, saying that, from Broad Sands into Elbury Cove, you know, like, there's a good 15, 20 minutes actually paddling around that little peninsula because we're all just getting going at that point from Broad Sands. I tell you what, man, it's like, it gives me goosebumps even thinking about it now. Like, when you see the armada of paddlers coming around the corner, it's like, it feels like you're going to war, like to battle or something, you know. There's
you got to get some orchestra players, so someone with like drum, boom, boom, boom,
boom.
Literally,
like a flag.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Brilliant. So right, we will see you on Saturday, taking off from Abbey Sands, 9:30 in the morning. Be there. Thanks so much for so much for coming on board, Sean. And it was great to hear all of your views about paddleboarding, and it's just so nice to chat again.
I really appreciate it because you have made me really rethink the paddleboard safety. Yeah, so I appreciate that.
Thank
seriously.
You. Not at all. Yeah, I'm a passionate paddleboarder. I'm a passionate kind of like safety advocate. And, you know, if anyone is interested in coming to get trained, just come and see me. If cost is an issue, it's just me. We can talk about it. It's not a problem. But it's really important that we kind of help people to grow their awareness. We don't want to scaremonger people. We do want to inspire people to just get involved, but we need to inspire them to get involved safely and at least understand that there is a pathway to being a better, more skillful paddler, yeah, and to having an awareness of more safety than just looking out of the window, you know? And the only way they can really get that is by going to an educator. You can't just rely on your aunties, nans, grandsons, daughters, brother, to give you the information accurately. It's not how it works in the real world. You wouldn't do that if you were trying to fly a plane. You wouldn't do that if you were driving a car. Yeah. You wouldn't do that if you were, you know, learning to play golf. You need some instruction. You need somebody to show you the ropes, you know? Absolutely. I don't know why I think people think that water sports are different somehow or that paddleboarding is different somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, it has all of the same and more of the risks that many of these other things that you do, you need to get trained for. Right? Even as simple as if you join a gym, you need someone to induct you on the gym equipment.
Yeah.
That's static equipment. Yeah, you could pull a muscle, but what makes you think that you can't do that on a paddleboard? And if you do that on a paddleboard and you become so injured, you lose the capacity to paddle and you're out in the ocean, don't you think that's a bit more dangerous?
Yeah.
So exactly. If someone listening wants to take you up on that, wants to have that conversation with you, is it best to come into Soak Lifestyle, into the cafe, or is it best to give you a call? How should they go about it?
You can, my WhatsApp is on the website. Okay. So anyone can WhatsApp me if you're worried about talking to me, because I'm not a very approachable guy.
What? Exactly the opposite.
I'm a very approachable human. You can call me, you can email me, you can WhatsApp me, you can do whatever you need to reach out, have this conversation with me. Yeah. If you want to improve your skill set, whatever situation you're in, I'm here to help. And I really mean that. I'm not just saying that. It used to be when I was at the helm of our really big business, I never had the capacity to be able to have this conversation. But this is literally the conversation I was having in the very beginning of stand-up paddleboarding, which is exactly where I see it now. Mm. I need to rebuild a community, rebuild people's awareness of the sport. And it falls down to a few people have this kind of energy and this kind of passion for it to be able to do it in the first place. I used to be in Cornwall. I am now in Devon. Make use of me if you feel you can need it, because I'm doing it anyway.
Exactly. Well, awesome. You're a great ambassador for water safety, and we wish you all the best with the paddle parade.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming online.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck.
All right.
Wasn't that great?
That was incredible. Really, really interesting to chat to Sean.
I know. It was a bit of an extended interview and we did cover quite a number of topics, but I think it was just so valuable to hear his passion,
yeah,
and his advocacy and ambassadorship for something that we all need to care about. And the way that he's raising awareness through the paddle parade is really innovative.
Yeah, and such an authentic voice in the space. Like, he clearly has a lot of experience with paddleboarding and with sea sports. Mm. And to have someone like that in Devon, you heard him at the very end of that conversation. If you're a starter, if you're a beginner of paddleboarding, or even intermediate, or even you consider yourself to be an expert, it's probably worth going and speaking to him.
Yes,
go into the cafe, mm-hmm, just have a chat with him.
Yeah, and he did mention, you know, that his WhatsApp is right on the website, so just get in touch with Sean. There are other events coming on. Some of them have to go into your diary. What I thought was really interesting is this new blog. It's out. It's like called 10 Things Not to Miss at the Agatha Christie Festival. And if I could just tell you, share one of these, it's outrageous. I can't get over that they've pulled this together. Hats off to Matt Newberry. He's an absolute genius. For one night only, they're pulling together a literary supergroup.
Okay.
They're called the Fun-Loving Crime Writers. They're going to be performing music at the Palace Theater on the 8th of September. These authors have collectively sold over 10 million books between them. These are famous, like, authors, crime authors. Tickets start at £14. And of course, after the show, they're going to be signing their own books. I mean, who's like, you know what I mean? You're like you're an author, published author, and you also play music. Now you're going to be on stage. It's crazy.
That is crazy. I really wasn't expecting the live music part.
I know. Literary supergroup. You're like, where's this headed?
Yeah.
So you book your tickets on the Palace Theater website. Head over to the International Agatha Christie Festival page on Facebook, and then you get also their latest news, links to all of the new announcements that are coming out, and then also read that top 10 list on the English Riviera blog, because it's really interesting. We've got two for the diary for you. There's a Polynesian party at the Berryhead Hotel. That's Friday the 15th of September at 7 p.m. And that is 7 p.m. till late with a hog roast, live music, and some luau vibes. Ooh, some Hawaiian. Luau vibes. Mm. Yeah. Should be a great time. And that is hosted by Shoalstone Seawater Pool. So they're going to have some great people out there. And Sarah's on the Beach is hosting an end of season party. Ready for this curveball?
Yes. No.
It's on Saturday, the 23rd of September, 7 p.m. until 1 a.m. And I thought, 1 a.m. on Preston? How on earth are they going to do that? It's at the Forum at the Riviera International Conference Center. Tickets are £10. It's at crossfaderevents.com. So it's like a beach party, but it's at the Riviera Center. And again, that's Saturday, the 23rd of September from 7 until 1 a.m. And they've got like house DJs, funk, live music, and all of good summer vibes.
Are you going to go?
Yes, it's the end of season party. Of course I am. Now, turning over to the jobs board, there's a room attendant needed at the Anchorage Hotel. You drop them a DM on Facebook or email xavier@anchoragehotel.co.uk. They need some kitchen and bar staff over in Brixham at the Burton. I think the Burton Hotel is in Brixham. I was going from memory. So send them a message or ring them on 01803-269-706. Do you want to take this last one?
Yeah, the Church House in Malden is hiring a full or part-time kitchen assistants and servers. And to apply for that or to get more details, call 07590-060-092. That's 07590-060-092.
Nice. Yeah. And the people at the Church House Inn are amazing. So yeah, you'd have it's a really nice work-life balance over there. And turning to the live music calendar, honestly, there are so many events on, you won't be able to swim. You know what I mean?
This Saturday is too, I might end up just hibernating in my room because there's too much to choose from.
It's too much to choose from.
That's the way it works.
I think on Saturday, literally, you could go, there's live music at the Grand all day. There's the paddle parade and they're going to come back and you'll find out during the interview that there's live music there. There's a DJ over at... obviously, there's a DJ playing till late over at Pride that starts, I think the DJ starts at 9:30 at night. And so that goes on till late. So yeah, there's so much going on. On Saturday the 2nd at Fishcombe Cove, they're having a disco. So this, I think, you know, I don't think it's affiliated with the paddle parade.
But it works very nicely hand in hand. Yeah.
It's kind of strange. 1,000 people all of a sudden turn up and wow, we're just so coincidentally having a disco. It's brilliant. So that's with DJ Luna V and that's from 6 p.m. On Sunday, the 3rd of September, Vienna Youth is playing at the Dock in Torquay starting at 3:30. Shout out to Sam.
Yeah, go Sam. The live music at the Dock is really pumping out.
And congratulations to winners of the Global Hospitality Awards Best Live Band 2023, I Love Amp. And I Love Amp, they play all the time over at the Offshore, so keep an eye on their socials for their next gig. Ready for the weather outlook?
It's going to be sunny and hot.
All weekend.
Yes! Finally.
A little late, yeah. But yeah, Saturday, sunny, 22 degrees, and the same for Sunday. So next week, we've got Graham Kerr from the English Riviera Walking Festival joining us, and also an update on the seafood feast. So make sure that you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a thing.
And I just want to ask Lynn, what are you going to do on the 2nd? What's your plans?
Oh, no.
Pride.
It's got to be Pride. It's got to be Pride. The Torbay Trojans American football team are doing a big recruiting event over at Pride.
Okay.
And we've helped them out with their marketing a bit. So stop by their stand, say hello to the team, and they'll all be in their full American football uniforms and stuff. So that'll be quite cool looking.
And you can grab a nice little wristband.
Yeah, they've got the silicone, those cool wristbands and everything, and pick up a leaflet and you can learn more about American football right here in Torbay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to have to go out and support them.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan for Saturday.
Yeah, that's Saturday. And then Sunday I'll be in bed. recovering from Saturday.
From the big game.
I know. You could just go boppity boppity bop, all around, the whole, all of Torbay. There's something going on all weekend and it's going to be brilliant weather. So yes. Yeah. Nice. How about you? What are you going to be up to?
I said I'm going to be hibernating because there's too much happening. So
overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed by choice. I will be in my room.
All right. Well, and in any case, we're wishing everybody a fantastic weekend. We'll see you out there.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.